coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Coalition. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
He's bringing in the highest of caliber in the cheekbones.
Oh, nice. Right, actually. Right. Nicholas. What do we expect? No less. Yeah, don't you know? Hip, and all that.
Bully to you and bully to this issue of Hey Kids Comics. So this is...
By way of introduction, this is Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer.
Okay.
That is the Jedi Cole. That is Sir Jedi Cole Houston. He's
recently knighted, don't you know?
With a lightsaber.
Yeah, well, that's smart.
You gotta be real careful. Unlike the Queen knighting Elton John, you can't actually touch the shoulder. Go straight through.
Pretty much, even just close proximity, you get some a little bit of a burn there.
Screams like a bar of soap, like a hot knife through a bar of soap.
Indeed.
Speaking of a hot knife through bar of soap, this is Hey Kids Comics. We are on issue, I believe it's 212. And again, if we're wrong, deal with it. We're one of the only shows that tells you what show number it is.
This is 212.
Hey, I was right. This is Mind Over Matter. You find us two issues into a story arc of Cole's devise to torture me. This is to torture me. That's what this was.
This is the finest type of torture one might offer, which is mental torture.
It is. It's like Luke going to Dagobah. Right, so Luke gets done with 200 episodes. What is the equivalent in the Star Wars universe of 200 issues of a podcast, which is blowing up the initial Death Star? So he achieves that. So you know, at the end of that, they're like, "Oh, you're the great returning hero. You return triumphantly to the rebellion, get some medals and stuff. Okay, now go out and do the hardest training you've ever had in your life with this little midgety green guy with giant ears. It's not Frank Oz's voice." Just pretend it's not. He's going to climb on your back and whisper in sweet nothings into your ear while you jump around a swamp. I've had that dream. But that's what this is for me. So what is this story arc about?
This is, of course, sci-fi. We were going to talk about psionics.
Mm-hmm.
Psionics. Hey, you can't get out of
here. Oh, no. Not for nothing, but, you know, my mom made a great psionics.
Oh, yeah, that was some good with the meat gravy and the
and
a little bit of basil in there.
Get out. Angelo loves some psionics.
Oh, yeah. Who didn't, you know, you don't like the psionics, there's something wrong with you. But no, and seriously, the psionic literally has become a kind of go-to power. I think we even mentioned it's sort of like, you know, the psionic powers are the every mutant. If you don't happen to have Marvel Comics on your imprint,
right,
psionics will fill in just fine.
Right, I'm pretty sure like Malibu was all psionics. Prime, Nightman, Solitaire, just you know when you need
that,
when you
creepy zombie green guy with the exo endoskeleton.
What was his name?
Creepy
zombie guy. This is why they didn't let us write comics for Malibu, because we kept pitching creepy zombie guy. They're like, no.
Yeah, we like it, but you know, do you have a different net? No.
No, we're artists. You will go with creepy zombie guy and you will like it.
Our creations are like our children, man.
So, last issue.
Did you change your children's names? I don't think so.
So last issue, we kind of gave you the overview.
Ghoul, I believe, was his name.
What was his name?
Ghoul.
Ghoul? Ghoul. Okay.
I think that's what his name was.
We gave you the top down, the 5,000 foot view of what we're going to be talking about for the next four issues. This issue is what, Cole?
This is Mind Over Matter.
Mind Over a Matter. Yeah,
and not in that kind of like walk across hot coals or Uri Geller getting outed by the Amazing Randy kind of way. This is like the real. This is for reals, Mind Over Matter.
This is the real stuff. This is Project Stargate, started by the CIA, back when we were using astral projection and automatic writing to try to figure out what the Soviets were doing. And is that what we're talking about?
similar, only more comic themed. So, unlike
I don't know if it gets more comic themed, to be honest, yeah, well, than what we actually
unlike
did.
Unlike staring at goats all day.
Yes.
You know, that's about the best they achieved with that project. In comics, you get things like MODOK or the Controller.
Oh, the Controller! I forgot about the Controller.
Or his sidekick, the Remote Controller. He worked from home.
Only on one channel. That was it. Like he couldn't control. He could only control one channel at a time. Really confusing for the elderly to figure out how to use him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the bane of many an older superhero.
Listen, I had to stop going over to the controller's house, and no, you're on the wrong input. If you wanna get inside of Thor's head, you got to be on this input. Your RCA cables are hooked up all wrong.
The problem is, the first thing that happens is the manual gets lost, and that's where all the codes are.
So I want to start this by trying again. So if you listened to last issue, and we hope you do, and if you haven't, let's go back to last issue. Pause it, go back, come back to this. Last issue, Cole and I, and this happens rarely with us, but we had a real disconnect about what this topic was about. And I felt like I did a disservice to Cole, myself, and you guys by not understanding. So I've spent this whole week in a quagmire of my own, just morass of the mind, digging and fighting like some kind of strange, weird, simple archaeologist just trying to find a spork in a KFC that burnt down. That's what I did this week. So I think with a little help from Cole, I'm going to now make my pitch for what we're doing from my perspective, because Cole brings these beautiful, wonderful, exuberant topics to us, and then we figure it out. Like, Cole has an idea, but by the end of the issue or the story arc, we've realized that what Cole had planted, the seed that Cole had planted in his own mind when he came up with this, has blossomed into, you know, what his subconscious wanted it to be. Or if I come up with something mine, this is what we do.
And
on this
is, yeah, and this is like one of those lightning struck trees that has, you know, grown in multiple directions, because it really is gone beyond anything I was imagining at the time. I'd said before, I didn't really know if this could sustain an entire arc.
And I think we've...
challenge was irresistible.
It will. So let me first of all clarify something, because we discussed something, and I think we came... My aha moment last issue was when we were talking on the show, and you said that this... that to you and where you're coming from, we're not talking about races of people. We're not talking about the government, you know, the Captain America's where you're a government programmed, you know, you volunteered for service. This is the individual, right? This is the you kind of came at it from that. Like you were having a hard time saying Superman is a psionic because his whole race is basically the way he's not special.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that anyone who arrives on Earth from Krypton and it's been borne out repeatedly.
Right.
Becomes the Superman. Or from Daxam, either one. They're apparently close cousins. But, you know, not everybody that arrives from everywhere else necessarily.
Tampa.
Yeah. Gets those conditions. And not everybody who is from a given planet necessarily has the powers that some of their own ilk have when they get here or before they get here.
So I have an admission of guilt up front on this, and that's that I've been very busy and been very in my own head, and I don't think I've been approaching the show with the same let's call it mental acuity as we have in the past. I haven't really been digging deep. You know, we've been doing research, but I haven't been looking for the answers the way I usually do. X-Files Season 6 versus X-Files Season 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in doing this in the last week, I think I finally awoken that mutant gene inside of me that wants to dig deep. So when I was thinking about this, and we were talking about the individualism, we were talking about how it's not a race, it's not a group necessarily, it's, you know, it's a manifest, like you said, it's like a mutant ability, it's kind of a singular, it's a manifested ability. I started really thinking about what that means and why you would use it. And we've talked about it upteenth times on the show over the last 212 issues. But I think now here's the part where I'm gonna give you this pitch, and then you're gonna tell me whether I'm right or wrong at the end.
Okay.
And I'm probably gonna be wrong. I look at it from a position of individuality. As a comic reader, as a comic creator, you know, we want to identify with the characters that are being portrayed on page. So if you have a character, let's put it out there as Nightcrawler. Let's say you have a Nightcrawler, right? We identify with that character because he's different. He's different and he has this ability, and we identify with that because we might feel different. I think we all feel different at different times in our lives. We feel, you know, different in the way that we interact with people, the way that we think about things, the things that interest us, the fact that we do a podcast about comic books every week, and we've done that for 8 years, and you know, people don't get it. People don't understand why we collect action figures, you know, why we drive all over, be it Dallas or Dayton, looking at GameStops for action figures, you know, or whether or not, you know, we might, if you want to get deeper in now than we had before, because when we were children, we were geeks or spazzes or nerds, and now we've kind of gotten to this kind of this cornucopia of clinical diagnoses, whether it's, you know, Asperger's or ADHD or, you know, however you identify. You know, it was funny because
– high-functioning sociopath.
Right, or whatever it might be. Lacey said something to me earlier this week because we were talking about Wolverine. And she said, what group, you know, what team hasn't Wolverine been a part of? And I said, you know, and I was like, he's been a part of basically all of them. And she said, oh, well, he's a joiner. And I said, no, he's a loner. And she said, well, how? I'm like, you can't be a loner unless there's people there to realize you're a loner. That's the thing, right? If you're just a loner, nobody would know you're a loner. So you've got to be a loner on a team of non-loners to be quantified. So when you start looking at these, we wake up in the morning and some days we don't feel like getting out of bed. Some days we don't feel like talking to people. You know, some days it's not, you don't want to go to work. It's hard. It's, you know, whether you identify, you start identifying as things like, you know, people on the autistic spectrum. And I'm not going to, you know, this isn't the hill I'm choosing to die on. I'm probably going to screw this up and we'll get letters, and Spindly Bits is going to stop listening to the show. Please don't Spindly Bits.
Apologies, Spindly Bits, because I'm right there with you.
You know,
this ain't going somewhere.
whether you identify in any way, we want to be able to, our struggle needs to be extrapolated and exploded on page. And I think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about these individual powers, these psionic powers. We all feel the Sisyphean task of whatever we have to do through our day, and what we see on the page is a hero or whoever it might be that is thrust upon with these abilities, these powers, and becomes the reluctant hero, which is, you know, a Joseph Campbell idea, this hero's journey of somebody choosing to use this thing that they were given when they could pretend it's not there just to get through their day or to fight a greater battle. And I think that for me, that's what it's about. It's about identification with the individual, and that's why we have so many of these individual psionic powers, and that makes it better for me to be able to understand where you're coming from. Am I anywhere close to where you're at?
I'm actually, unfortunately, a bit dumbstruck, because which is not to say you're off base or anything. I just wow.
Let's also admit that some of this stuff's pretty damn cool.
Absolutely. But I think really the crux of this was that the psionic power allows for anything and everything you can imagine. And you can layer onto that sense of individuality, which can then explain why you have such diversity. Why would something like that not manifest itself universally in two or three iterations? Why isn't every psionic either psychic, telekinetic, or, you know, some other species of psionic power?
Right.
Why do some get to create laser beams with their eyes and others multiples of themselves, and still others have a veritable universe of powers? And I think the answer lies right into that sort of individuality, because at its core, the logic of biological reproduction dictates that every pairing should give you an identical outcome. Yet not only in people, but like anyone who's ever, you know, seen a litter of cats or you know, dogs or cats or any number of other animals that all come from the same source, that all, you know, were evicted from the same womb simultaneously.
Right.
And then, like, you know, let's say you keep a couple of the puppies from the litter, and you all of a sudden you see these two. Not only do you see these variations in physical form, but in the mental form, where these vast differences in behavior that really defy the underlying logic that would dictate, you know, why is that even possible? Why is that a thing? And it's because nature abhors a vacuum.
Right.
And that's why you get diversity in all things. So it makes perfect sense that the psionic would occur in so many ways.
Since we're talking about diversity, this particular issue is about the vast diversity of psionic abilities. Just an inch deep and a mile wide.
Yes, indeed. And it's rather, and you do see some similarities. You do see some crossover, as it were, where certain abilities repeat themselves. And, you know, one of the big complaints I've always had personally, if unvoiced largely, with the X-Men and the idea of, like, you know, all these mutants, is that almost to a man, nothing ever occurs twice.
Right, yeah.
And that shouldn't even be possible. There should be five or six guys. You know, Stryker shouldn't be rather surprised to think, I thought you were unique. I was wrong. And then it turns out that Lady Deathstrike's similar but not identical. So ultimately, he was wrong.
So what is your favorite go-to psionic ability? Because, you know, we could run through a list from astral projection to teleportation of psionic abilities and the other 45 quantifiable, you know, that we don't break down into subcategories and flora
exactly.
And fauna. And, but what for your money as a comic book aficionado, what is your go-to psionic ability?
I think the go-to psionic ability is what would probably be described as telekinesis.
Okay.
Because at its heart, a great many of the variations are simply variations on telekinesis.
If you can throw a desk with your mind, you might be a psionic.
There you go.
Sorry, that was my... I've been doing this all day, by the way. I've been doing Jeff Foxworthy psionic jokes getting ready for this, so gird your loins, because if you can make my knives with your fist, you might be a psionic.
I thought that's where that was headed.
I've literally been driving people insane with this all day long. If you can get a recipe for a good gumbo from a chef 8 states away, you might be a psionic. That's my Jeff Foxworthy impression. It's pretty good. It's close to my Jerry Seinfeld.
I was impressed there.
Thank you.
What you basically have is the telekinetic power gives you the ability to create force fields or beams of energy or take flight. For example,
sure.
Unpowered flight, or perhaps even to do such things as manipulate the weather.
Oh, weather manipulation.
Literally using that telekinetic power to manipulate things on an atomic level. Oftentimes, the really fun thing with psionics often is that the psionic isn't encumbered with the knowledge of how it's even possible. It simply is. And I guess if you really look at it, that's at the core of psionics. It quite literally embodies it is what it is.
So psionics are the magic of technology that we don't understand yet.
Oh, that's right.
To quote Tony Stark.
Well, there's a lot of science we don't understand, but it's just our job 5 days a week.
That's true. Does anyone understand? I think Professor X, Apocalypse, Mr. Sinister, Darkseid maybe might understand the true core concepts of psionics. Would you feel that would be accurate?
I think there are some who are either learned or intuitive or otherwise have that, the ability to reason out what's really going on. But to others, it's simply like, you know, I can run real fast, and I can run real fast. And there, a lot of it is just being completely unbothered by the specifics.
Right, not having to care.
You just simply are.
And I think for my money, my favorite application, and you and I have talked about this, was there was an issue of Ultimate X-Men, Mark Millar's Ultimate X-Men, where I'm trying to remember who got messed up real bad in a fight. One of the characters got messed up real bad in a fight, and Jean Grey had to perform surgery on him, like brought him into the sick bay, whatever, at the Xavier Institute, and was getting ready to perform surgery. And somebody was like, wait, she's not a surgeon. And the idea was she doesn't have to be, because she can reach out into the mind of the eight, you know, the top eight world-class surgeons, grab the information from them, and then use that to perform surgery.
Well, and then on top of that, she can get somebody like Quicksilver to run out and get her within a split second, you know, whatever rongeurs or retractors or other medical equipment she doesn't have at hand. Because just because you have the knowledge doesn't mean you have the equipment.
Right. And keep in
mind, you know, she could reach out to Bob Vila, but it doesn't mean she's got a miter box.
You might be a psionic. I don't even know what that means, but I love it. She might reach out to Bob Vila. That doesn't mean she... So, okay, wait. No, I now know. I worked through it. I'm good.
Okay,
I'm back.
Good,
I'm back.
Good
I'm back.
I had faith in your ability to reason that out.
I'm back now. Yeah, and keep in mind, when she was doing the surgery, she wasn't even doing it with her hands. You know,
yeah.
she was, through telekinesis, manipulating...
Well, of course, I guess she could manipulate the very air itself into scalpels and retractors. And
air scalpels.
Yeah.
That's coming
that
from
so cool.
The Marvel Max imprint next year, Air Scalpel.
She probably, you know, really did play a mean air guitar.
If you're that powerful, why do you care? You know, at that point, you probably play a mean, damn it, you snuck that one.
Well, because you want to do fun things, you know, on your time away.
Don't globetrotters me with an air guitar joke. Don't make me look into the bucket of, don't drop the bucket of confetti at me while I'm trying to find the ball behind your back. Don't do that. do I look like a Washington general to you?
oh, my.
But yeah, I think that was my favorite depiction of you know, doing it all at once, and then the on-panel characters are like, she can't do this, and like, oh no, she can. Do you have a Maserati you need fixed? She can do that next. Like whatever she needs, whatever knowledge she needs.
We got her a miter box for Christmas.
You never know when she's gonna reach out. She's been doing lots of gutter work.
That's right. She cleaned up the rumpus room. You mean the danger room? No, the rumpus room.
No.
It's like a whole different...
It's a whole different room. It's cool.
It's an
new
X-Man cave.
Oh, my God. It's cool. It's new.
That's right. Just like the cake bug.
Just like the cake bug. And I think if we're gonna talk about to tie comics and TV shows, because I think we all know we'd rather be watching Daredevil together. I think one that occurred to me while we were doing the research, and if I was looking for a depiction of a psionic power that you can point to, very well done and super creepy. If you watch Jessica Jones, Purple Man in Jessica Jones,
very good choice.
Just the ability to force people against their will to perform at your leisure is the opposite end of that spectrum, you know.
And that's also a good point, because that's another of those various species of psionics where you're actually able to touch the minds of others, to control them, to impose your will. And that's a very common chestnut as well.
It's a more villainous chestnut, unless you're Professor X, because apparently he just does it to everybody. Oh no, they're too powerful for their own good. Put these stopgap measures in place so that they can't hurt themselves or others.
That's right. It's kind of Minority Reporting it.
Speaking of, did you know that precognitive ability, that prescience, is more common than you think in comics. There are a lot of precogs in comics as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You can go ahead
Oh, I mean, you've got everywhere from Destiny, from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Old Shield Face.
Yeah.
Destiny, you've got Blindfold, which was another X-Men character. You've got stuff like cited as Dr. Manhattan, which I guess, you know what, we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait to get into I think next issue, no, the last issue will be the Dr. Manhattan
issue. Yeah, the last issue, we're really going to be touching on some just beyond.
Beyond, yeah. Yeah, so, Clock King is another that's cited as having prescience or precognition. It's a really cool power. Destiny, I think you're dead on with that one, because I remember some really cool like Destiny stories that were out there that were pretty rad.
Yeah, and one of the things that kind of from Days of Future Past that was kind of a would have been neat to see someone follow up on is how much that the events of that storyline had to mess with her.
Oh yeah,
because everything, every fiber of her being was screaming out that the path is set, that you know she is going to murder this senator, and that's going to set into motion. Who knows? It would be a fascinating follow-up to see what her vision of the future was versus what it became. It certainly wasn't the future that Kitty Pryde comes back in time to prevent, but what was the future that should have happened, at least as far as her powers were telling her?
Right. So I've got a question for you. How do you line up a character like Longshot? Like
first against the wall when the revolution comes?
That's good. That's good.
I don't like Longshot.
Why don't you? Why haven't we had a show about the fact that I love Longshot and you hate Longshot? Why do you hate Longshot? Wait, we're taking a detour. We're stopping at the world's largest ball of twine.
Into Mogoverse. Not Mogoverse. Mojoverse.
The Mojoverse, yeah.
Mojo. There are certain storylines that emerge in comics that don't belong in the comics they emerge in.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going to leave that one.
But he obviously has some sort of psionic power. His luck manipulation would.
He has better luck manipulation than the Shamrock.
Well,
who
sure.
is lucky enough to appear once, or we're lucky enough. Here's a blast of the past. Aquarian.
Oh, what was Aquarian from?
Aquarian was had walked off the set of Godspell.
Oh my God, yes. Yes.
And would later land a role in The Walking Dead.
That's hilarious.
So but he had like, you know, all kinds of force field powers and all kinds of funkadelic powers, if I recall correctly.
Well, speaking of force field and funkadelic powers, we touched on this last issue, but tactile telekinesis. So tactile telekinesis is the absolute catch-all psionic ability for anybody, anything that you ever wanted to have. Any ability, any possible way to – so any superpower, any traditional superpower. So essentially what it is, it's basically you've sheathed yourself and telekinetic energy from your mind that's going to give you – basically, if you get punched, you never get touched, right? It's basically bouncing off of your telekinetic shield. If you need to fly, you use that telekinetic energy to propel yourself. If you need to be super strong, you're not actually hitting someone. The telekinesis is hitting someone. You're propelled by your mind for speed, for strength. You know, you can use it in combat. So it's really the super strong, super fast, super tough umbrella ability.
Absolutely. It allows for anything.
Right.
It literally becomes the means by which anything goes. And one of the things that's interesting about that is a lot of writers have embraced the idea of psionic powers in wonderful ways. And I don't want to say too much on the subject of either of these characters, but two characters that have benefited brilliantly from this are the Guardian from the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar, also known as... No, really, seriously, it's not a Superman ripoff so much. Really.
No, look at the Mohawk. Obviously, they're different.
Yeah, he has a Mohawk. Superman, no Mohawk. You tell me. He's purple. Superman's a white boy.
He's purple.
I guess technically mauve.
But yeah, get it right. He's mauve.
And then there's mauve.
Oh, B. Arthur. Now you're going to take me to that place. I don't need to go there right now.
Take you to your special golden place.
You're going to take me to my golden place where I keep telling Betty White to get out of the way.
That's right. And Betty White says, I'll bury them all.
What? No, just steepled fingers in a corner.
That's right. But, you know, John Byrne did a wonderful take on the nature of his powers that were, in many ways, it was sort of like his love letter to Superman before he got landed Superman, in the same way that Star Trek and Star Trek, Into Darkness were J.J. Abrams' love letter to Star Wars before he landed Star Wars.
I never thought about that, but you're right. That's accurate. I agree with that. Yeah.
And ultimately, the other character that had benefited beyond imagining by the advent of psionics being kind of a writer's go-to is Plastic Man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Because as the JLA record that Catherine and I found at a Half-Price Books years ago clearly pointed out, and it's 33 RPMs, is he used to be a criminal, but he reformed, and then he reformed and reformed and reformed again.
And the thing that always confused me about Plastic Man, right, is that he could not only control his elasticity. So you've got that. You've got that is an established power.
Yeah.
You've got your Reed Richards. I guess Reed Richards suffers from this a little bit, but I think they played a little more close to the chest. But he also could control his net volume.
Yes, absolutely. And also his constituent atoms.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it gets down to the telekinesis at an atomic level with him.
Well, to the point where it's very much Firestorm-esque, in that on a limited level, he can convert whatever portions of his person he so desires into... It's like the T-1000 Plus, because where the T-1000 failed and could only make guns, knives and stabbing weapons, because... guns and bombs have moving pots and chemicals.
I love the fact that your Schwarzenegger is pretty close to your Sanders.
Balloon drop.
It's you're tiptoeing around the Sanders.
I didn't realize that, but it is dangerously close.
You're a toe in the water of Sanders.
That's right. So, but, you know, he basically takes that idea of a polymimetic Malamar and...
sure, Malamar.
adds in the additional element of being able to will whatever... I mean, if he wants to turn himself into the shape of a rocket ship, that's great. But writers began to ask, how does he then become a rocket ship?
How does he take off?
Yeah, how do you suddenly will solid fuel into existence deep within your bowels?
I think we know the answer to that.
Assuming that the exhaust port is, anatomically correct, if you will.
I want Neil deGrasse Tyson to give an episode of Cosmos on that.
But, the idea was that he is the not only psionic, but it's been posited that Plastic Man is the single most powerful character in the entire DC universe.
He almost has to be. Like, when you really think about it, he almost – because he's not – you know, there are those that can control their atomic – they control their own atomic at an atomic level.
Yeah.
You said Firestorm. He can sort of he controls outside atomic, but there are those that can control the shape of their body. There are those that can make weapons out of their body. You know, that exists. There are also those that can change their shape. We already stated Mr. Fantastic, but to have one that can not only change their shape and their volume, but then create chemical reactions within themselves, he could basically become a city.
Oh yeah,
if he wanted to.
A thriving city, no less.
Right, full of himself. As long as they were still attached, I imagine. I don't think he's ever broken off into multiple hymns.
I'm not really certain, because he had a son, but I don't know if it was by natural means or just, branching off in an amoeba-like way.
So, speaking of branching off in an amoeba-like way, I want to branch off from this topic and go to my I'm a professional. What might be my favorite underrated power. When written well, super cool. But largely underutilized, which is the ability to understand, read, and translate any language.
Oh, I so read your mind on that. Yeah.
Did you?
See, what I loved about that concept was it, for the first time, to my knowledge, suggested that apart from beasts, there were even more useless powers, you know, at least for field team.
Right.
Useless.
Absolutely useless. But when used correctly and when presented in a you know, with – if you're making Thanksgiving dinner – you're going to notice if the cranberry sauce isn't out. You know, you might not want the cranberry sauce necessarily, but there will be a negative void if the cranberry sauce isn't there. In the terms of the New Mutants, Cypher is the cranberry sauce. And look no further than the Asgardian Wars crossover event that really explores Cypher's ability. And it really doesn't hit you kind of in the sternum until the very end. Do you remember that, Cole? Do you remember what they do?
I do. I actually remember very well that, among other things, he was naturally the only one in the team who could read Asgardian.
Yes.
And was poring over the books in their library.
My favorite thing about it is that he's the only – well, I think there were two or three. But in the terms of this book, which was sort of a multiverse type book, I don't think that it stood necessarily as super canon, you know. But he stayed at the end. Everybody else took, you know, effed off back to Earth and continued their fight against the Brotherhood or whoever they were fighting. Cypher stayed. He's like, I'm useful here. I don't feel useful. And I think that was a nod to the fact that they hadn't been using the character correctly. Was, you know, that's the doff of the cap to, you know, I could be better utilized. You know, when the character in the book admits that he feels useful in a way that he's never been useful before by the writer of the book, or it was a thumb in the eye to whoever had been writing Cypher previous.
Well, also, I think Cypher was a difficult nut to crack because he presented two sides of a coin. One was that we've never really explored the idea that you have your chromopies out there. And Chromapy was a character from the Atrocious Universe that myself and Steve McCauley had created, sort of willed into existence accidentally, and it soon became replete with over 150 characters, all completely ridiculous. But one of the earliest characters that were the genesis of this was a character Steve created called Chromapy, who could change the color of his urine at will. That was his sole power. And granted, that concept was stolen from Piers Anthony's Xanth novels.
Sure.
Where everybody had some sort of magical ability, even if it was something as useless as changing the color of your urine. As long as you had some magic, then you were good to go. So, essentially, that's what they went, you know, he represents that sort of useless power in the sense of being a member of the X-Men team. So while that's a wonderfully fascinating concept and one that needed exploration, there's only so far you can take that in a team book where the core tenets are getting out and kicking ass.
Right. You don't have the martial ability, but you can save a lot of ass from that library if you know what you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the neat things with that particular storyline is he's chastised by an Asgardian wench. As, if I recall the line, she tells him he's less than nothing.
Right.
Because he can't pick up a Asgardian sword, which I think even some of the other X-Men, like Storm, would have been hard-pressed to pick that up.
Right.
Because
sure.
You know, even if you get a good headwind going, that doesn't help you lift swords.
But Cypher was one of those characters in what I was speaking to earlier that when I was younger and reading, you know, gave me, I guess, we'll call it hope, you know, in that Donald Blake Thor kind of way where you're like, I'm the scrawny 112-pound kid that loves to read. And because of that, you know, and I read this and I'm like, well, maybe, you know, maybe there is some use for my weirdness out there in the world somewhere. Let's, you know, we'll keep cracking at it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think that was the best disposition for the character because it gives him a worthwhile place in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
I don't know if it was ever further explored, because unfortunately a lot of concepts like that are wonderful flash in the pan and not intentionally. It's just that nobody ever thinks to go back and in a kind of unrelated, related way, since this comes from the comics, there was a great DC Star Trek comic where they did a like 2 or 3 part trial of Captain Kirk and revisited the outcome of a lot of these classic Star Trek episodes.
Really?
Including that whole thing about them, oh, we left behind a communicator that's the basis of all of our technology, and maybe those gangster planet people will, you know, we can't just turn around and go back and get it. You know, like, man, shove a guy and grab it and go.
We can't just beam it. Like, what? Yeah. You can lock on to Kirk falling from space, you know, like free-falling, Halo jumping from space. You can lock on to him and bring it, but you can't just lock on to a tricorder on a table.
But apparently, you know, Rocco or Moose or somebody was brought in as a witness in Kirk's trial. And what was very clever about the story is that he's like on his way out. He goes, oh, here's your – you left this behind. We don't know what to do with it.
It's like, here you go. I don't know what this is.
Despite all the speculation, it turned out that nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
It's like Dodgson. Communicator. We got a communicator here. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
But, you know, I think that is one of those things I would love to see little, and I love when this does happen, little storylines being revived and re-explored, or, you know, what is the aftermath? Because a lot of stuff just gets left behind once it's done.
I would love to see, like, Alan Moore get a hold of that, get a hold of Cypher and really write, you know, just Cypher. Just give me like really flesh out his abilities, really, you know, beyond any you know, ideas that I've never begun to think about that you could use that power for would be, you know, amazing. I would love to see that.
Okay, here is an interesting take on psionics that just occurred to me in like casting about for different characters. The puppet master, who, by all accounts, his power comes from some sort of atomic clay. But what if it's the clay itself that he makes his puppets with that then imbues him with the ability to control whoever the puppet is based on? But what if that's just what he thinks is going on?
Right.
The reality is, it doesn't matter. He could just go down to Hobby Lobby and buy a plasticine, and it would work just as good, but he's tied into this radioactive clay that probably is killing him.
Slowly destroying him, yes.
I mean, you know, the thing is, he's always been depicted as bald. Looks like sort of like if Howdy Doody didn't have hair and a hat, because he's got one of those hideous, freakish puppet heads.
I'm trying to remember Puppet Master. Like
his dummy head. It's basically his blind daughter, who probably went blind from that damn clay, by the way.
Alicia Masters?
Yeah. But, you know, I think that basically, he probably had a full head of hair at one time.
Oh, yeah, he does have a rather protruding cranium going on.
He's got like the Star Child head going on.
You've been all about – you've been on some Star Child dick here for the past couple of years. That's right.
There's a lot of bald pates and to get Shakespearean about it.
Yeah, apparently the more brave – we were talking about this before the show. The more psionic you are, the weirder you're allowed to look.
Yes, that's so true.
So you look at like the leader or Cole's all-time favorite, MODOK. And you just get weirder and weirder the more and more psionic you are. It just you're allowed to look as weird as humanly possible.
Precisely. And that's a good good point there on him. So you've got, you know, a variety of this diversity of psionic powers that go run the gamut and then sometimes combine in strange ways. And I think that, you know, when we get to the diversity of psionic powers, it really plays in nicely to the concept I put forth that the mutant genome is little more than a trigger in the way that the mutagen ray or the mists are.
Right.
That it's already there. You just don't know it. And I think, you know, people are like Professor X is zeroing in on this mutant genome, imagining that's what's causing these powers, where the reality is it's all across the board psionics. The mutant genome can create physical mutations, however, in my opinion, such as with Angel.
Ah, the wings, yes.
Yes, Angel's wings are a natural physical mutation. However, his ability to fly with them is tied directly into a psionic ability to cause those wings to be worthwhile for flight. Because, frankly, an angel's wings, the human body and bird's wings do not combine to make for aerodynamics.
And this brings us full circle to Namor.
Oh, yes. Yet again.
Because psionics are the only thing that explains how he has gained the miracle of flight. How he can leave this mortal plane, this grounded earth, this dirt beneath our feet, and fly and soar through the air only with tiny ankle wings that Cole so poignantly pointed out would have to be astride like he was riding a bull for them not to hit each other.
He would constantly have to spread his legs. He'd have to have like some sort of weird exercise equipment that forces his legs apart to train them, to have that muscle memory, keep your legs that far apart. Otherwise, those wings are as effective as those of the Muggerville 7 Zone Turducken. His trio of tiny wings ranging from those of a turkey, a duck, and a chicken, all awkwardly arranged on his back for maximum uselessness.
How many of the Muggerville 7 do you think equate their powers to psionics?
Most of them don't really even know. You know, that's a bit high concept for them. They don't go in for a lot of that book learning.
Sure.
So in their case, you probably not so much.
Are you familiar with the comic book Chew?
I've heard of it. It rings familiar, but I can't say I recall precisely what was going on there.
So Chew follows a detective, or I shouldn't call him a detective, a member of the U.S. FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, who solves crime. But he solves crime because he's a sebopath. For those of you that don't know, a sebopath is someone who gets psychic impressions from the food that he eats.
Uh-huh.
So he'll, like, go into, like, one of the things was trying to find out whether, you know, this particular chicken restaurant, which was a knockoff KFC, was using KFC's recipe. So he'd go in and eat it to get psychic impressions of what's happened. You know, so that makes him the all-star of the Food and Drug Administration world. But also couched within all this book are all these other food-based psionic abilities. A SIBO Scrivener. These are all inventions, by the way. SIBOPATH is not. SIBOPATH is a real quote-unquote power. Depicted mostly through vampirism, where you would see in a movie a vampire suck your blood and see the events that have transpired in the last year, the last month, whatever has happened.
Oh, just like reading, almost like reading the entrails.
Correct. So, but being a SIBO Scrivener is somebody who can write about food so accurately that you taste the food.
Okay.
You know, so like if you were a food blogger and you could write about it, a sebotulator gives you the ability to communicate with food. A vorspoth is somebody that becomes smarter the more he eats. So there's all these different powers that they've developed, but you know, it gets down to the point where this guy, this detective, Tony Chu, has to gets to the point in the comic where he's basically eating dead people to get the psychic impressions of what happened to them, you know, that type of thing. It's a really interesting, weird-ass book. It's Image. I would suggest it. It's cool, but it's not a superhero-y book. It's super weird, but it does really kind of explore psionics in a real interesting, different way than, you know, even we've been talking about on this show, which is kind of the standard.
Yeah, that's a fascinating take on psionics.
Yes.
It seems to be like in the, what was that, Jim Starlin? Was it Dread Star?
Oh, Dread Star, yes.
I can't remember her name, but there was that chick he hung around with who had like this little monkey creature. And like together they could like peer into, you know, the electronics of things or control things. And that was kind of another interesting take on a psionic power, or sort of tied into another entity.
Where it had almost to be a team-up, almost a Jan and Jace situation.
Right. Oh, and here's talking about the manipulation, physical manipulation, psionic power of Changeling, a.k.a. Beast Boy, a.k.a. Ooh. Garfield Logan, who seems to have a limitless knowledge of the shapes and forms of all animal life. And, again, can pack the pounds or shed them as necessary, becoming anything from a mosquito to a blue whale as necessary.
Which, and not only, you know, and the cool thing about that is there have been instances where it's not he's not bound to just Earth life because he's tied to the Red. So whatever animal he's around, he can take the shape and form of that animal because the morphogenic – whatever psionic energy the Earth is giving off, he can tap into, much like Animal Man.
Yeah, so if it exists wherever he is, he can become it.
Right. Which is, again, a bit of a MacGuffin for power, for a power base, but hey, it's cool. It's cool to read.
But it does explain how he was able to become Lockheed, a giant version of Lockheed, literally a Lockheed SR-71 Blackbird-sized version of Lockheed in X-Men Teen Titans.
See, I need to read that. I still haven't read X-Men Teen Titans. I need to read that.
You know, given the sheer volume of stuff I haven't read, I am compelled to forgive you anything you haven't.
Well, I'm hip deep. You want to talk about psionics? I am hip deep in that in the Doom Patrol omnibus, and it's,
there's psionics to go.
Oh my God, with Mr. Nobody and what's her name? Crazy Jane. Did you ever read any of that?
No, it was it just seemed a little too outside the realm of.
It's outside the realm. It is but Crazy Jane. One of the coolest concepts. It's a very Grant Morrison concept because, you know, he's very, and I promise you, I'm not going to climb up all on his dick, but because Grant Morrison's all about being outside, you know, exploring the outside, the limits of the mind. Whereas, you know, we look at kind of the other side of that bell curve when we look at Alan Moore, which is really exploring the intricacies of the human condition. Grant Morrison has a character in this book called, you know, first of all, you've got Robot Man. You've got Negative Man. You know, you've got all your old standards.
Yeah.
But there's a character that he introduces called Crazy. I believe it's Crazy Jane. But Crazy Jane suffers from more at the time multiple personality disorder. Now the DSM's renamed it. But she has something like 100 personalities, and each personality has a different superpower.
Interesting. That's very reminiscent of. Oh, what was it? There was an anthology series called Wild Cards that I believe Orson Scott Card.
I have some of them.
May have been the editor on. That was basically this event happens that causes people to either become superpowered and cool, or superpowered and just kind of there, or superpowered and hideous, or just plain hideous. And like any anthology series, it can reach the pinnacles of amazing and fall into the doldrums of what the hell. because you have, you know, a unifying concept, you have an editor trying to keep people on track, and you have writers who frankly don't get it.
Sure.
But one of the most fascinating characters to come out of this was Captain Toaks.
Oh, no.
Who would literally get high and you never knew which of the multiple incarnations of his power would emerge. There was the aquatic Aquarian. There was there were like 15 or 20 different things that could emerge from that, each with its own superpower.
That's cool.
And oftentimes each with its own limits. And he would, like, I guess during the duration of the high, like, he's nearly killed as the Aquarian because he's out of water for so long.
I like that.
And is drying up. And it was very reminiscent in a way of sort of extrapolating on the whole Miracle Man thing, which took a scientific bent on the magic of Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam. And we'll talk a lot about that as a psionic in a later issue, because that is part of an upcoming issue about countermeasures.
There, by the way, so a few things, because we need to close this up. But if you go online, you can find a quiz to because one of the things in the book is that Robot Face, he takes it upon himself to befriend Crazy Jane, and Crazy Jane befriends him, and they start trying to become more human together. And to do so, one of the things he's doing is trying to catalog all of the personalities and their concordant powers. There is a quiz online, if you search for it, to be able to match all of Crazy Jane's personalities to her powers, which I'm not going to take, because, good Lord, I'm having a hard enough time reading it, let alone recalling it. But yeah, I found there's a website that, if you want to go to it, it is www.pickthebrain.com, and you can unleash the full potential of your mind. According to this website, you can have extreme mental power, and you can unleash your superpower. So if you're interested in that, you can find out how to do it. The page is about, I would say, roughly, you know, two pages long. And apparently with this information, you can become a superhero. So I would hope that you would look into that. Cole, why do you have any final thoughts on this issue before we wrap up?
Well, I think that this is literally an issue that was long overdue in some ways. It amazes me it took me this long for it to cross my brain. And then, as I said last time, the Hooked on Psionics was the first thing that just sort of popped in my head one day. And it has snowballed beautifully into this thing that just keeps going and going. And one of the things that really fascinates me is the deeper we dug, the more we just have discovered the things we didn't even think about. It's brought in us into the debate of what exactly constitutes psionics, and has got me thinking about, you know, where are all the psionics versus the, you know, is Spider-Man's power remotely psionic, or is it simply physical?
Right.
Is it just an expansion of, you know, kind of that man plus idea from past issue from way, way back?
Yes, yes. I mean, but we do have to consider that there is a spider sense involved. So there is a prescience, a precognitive ability that he has.
It certainly borders on the psionic, if not actually...
Yes, into psionics. So we will discuss what's the next issue we're going to do.
Our next issue is escaping me. At the moment, I'm trying to recall the order because I know that Countermeasures was one of them, but we're still three issues out, and I think we actually even talked about all of them last time.
We did, indeed.
And now, refer to the last issue to find out what the next
issue
is.
That's true, yeah. We'll tell you what it is next week. But rest assured, we have a lot more to talk about with this. You spoke to Countermeasures. You spoke to Godlike. We're going to talk about the big users of psionics at some point. It's going to be a great ride. I couldn't be happier that we're doing this, because of the fact that it needs to be explored, and it's really waking up my brain to Things That I Didn't Know Power Players is the next issue. Power Players.
Okay, yeah, Power Players is. Or that's where we're going to get into our heavy hitters. And our heaviest hitters.
And I'm really...
That's right, we have Power Players, then Countermeasures, and then Godlike. The point where psionics have taken the mind beyond the body and beyond humanity.
The omniscience. The ability to manipulate whatever you want. It's insanity. Insanity in the hands of Alan Moore becomes further insanity and somehow comes around to making sense. So, yeah, why don't you plug us up? We'll get out of here for tonight. We'll let these fine people, including Mr. Spindly Bits, get back to what he's doing.
That's right.
You're not getting out of this, Spindly Bits.
Yeah.
You're not getting
right,
out of
Spindly,
this.
You're now going to be our official go-to.
You're our Mrs. Calabash.
Yeah, that's right. You're our official fan.
You're the fan.
That's right. You've now been dubbed the official fan of this show. And now the show is a fan of you.
Aww.
So you can find us, of course, on the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. We are also now powered by Cinelinks. By the time you listen to this, I'll be pretty well caught up with getting Cinelinks episodes up a few days after they air on the JCU. At Cinelinks.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com, and I will do the try to get back to doing some more tweets in 2017. I was very proud of myself having done quite a lot of tweeting in 2016. I never imagined I would be doing that much ever in my life. So this is a feather in my own cap, if I do say so. Just out of pure, I can't believe I'm actually tweeting. And also, just to kind of get you up to date on a few things, I think I did over 200 tweets last year.
200? 200 tweets.
So now I have a higher benchmark, too.
Let's double that. Let's go for 400 tweets this year. I'll help you.
All right. And you can – let me get my bearings here on the timing. I believe that this will have aired either a week before or a day before the next swap meet at the Lost Toys on Empire Central in Dallas. I have a ton of new stuff. So if you've seen me at the past swap meets, there's going to be so much more stuff. Or if you're on in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, or even if you don't care about paying shipping, check out the Jedi Cole Universe Virtual Toy Show on Facebook. Visit the Jedi Cole Universe page and the Hey Kids Comics page if you want to just shout out to us there, because I haven't really put anything on those pages in a while. And check out Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info for listings of all of the conventions in the state of Texas. I'll be diligently working in the next few weeks to get that caught back up. A lot more conventions are finally announcing their 2017 dates. I need to get my ass in gear there. And most especially, you're going to always hear a lot about this, AllCon 2017.
Ooh, snap.
Also known as AllCon the 13th. Needless to say, horror is the theme this year. For the 13th year, I will personally be involved in many, many aspects. It seems like every year I just get sillier and sillier for AllCon. I have been going nuts buying prizes. I have grossly overspent my budget, as I do every year. AllCon's gracious enough to give me some money, and I'm gracious enough to spend more than they give me. So come on out this year. I found some amazing stuff at a price that means I get to be even more generous than ever. And if you like the Star Wars, check out Eddie and myself on the Rancor Pit Live on watchonairlive.com, the first and third Sundays of every month, noon to 1 Central.
There you go. There's a lot coming. 2017 is going to be a good year for the JCU. And just to give a shout out, speaking of Twitter, to the crew over at the Super Cool Nerd Show, we are still here. We are still kicking. I would like to officially invite Rob on the show at some point, so that we can have a so that we can have a joke off. We can have a roast off of each other, because he apparently thinks I died. I did not die.
Oh my goodness.
I am still alive, at least.
And also, right now, on behalf of AllCon, I'm going to challenge my co-host here with Onliners 2017.
You know it's coming back. I can't stay away from it.
Yeah, we need to get working on Onliners 2017, whether it be hosted by Andrew Farmer or Matt Maleros, a.k.a. Muscular Andy.
Damn it, why do I have to be weak, Andy?
That wasn't my idea. You weren't there, so that's what you get.
If you have a twin who's more muscular than you but looks exactly like you, you might be a psionic. All right. From ours to yours, buy, collect, enjoy your comics, even if they're in another language and you have to be cipher to decipher them. Thank you, everybody, and good night, Spindly Bits. We love you dearly. All right. Cole, why don't you say good night?
Good night, you princes of Spindly Bits.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week when we talk to you. What we talk about when we talk about the things we talk to you in your mind about. Good night. Wow. I don't know what I'm confused. I confused myself. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.